The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1 with the Kia Sportage. When you drive your new Kia Sportage, prepare to be noticed. The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1 with the Kia Sportage. Peace of mind as standard. Quality guaranteed. Kia, home of the 7-year warranty.
Now, just to say that our competition this morning, the prize is €1,000 voucher for Brooks. And just to explain, there are three clues this morning. I gave you the first one a few minutes ago. And that was, it shares part of its name with Glenstall, Kylemore and a famous theatre. So you have to now guess based on the second clue we have. And the idea being that hopefully you'll get it all in three clues. But have a listen now to the second clue. And we're looking for the name of a place, by the way. And just a reminder again, the first clue, it shares part of its name with Glenstall, Kylemore and a famous theatre. Now, the second clue, part of its name is not the daffodil, but the other national emblem of Wales. If you think you know the right answer, text us at 51551. Now, I'm reliably informed that the last time an opera premiered in Waterford City was 1793. That is, until this year, as Theatre Royal Productions are preparing to stage The Invader. Well, Ben Barnes is the director of the Theatre Royal in Waterford and the director of the opera. Ben, you're very welcome.
Good morning, John. Nice to be here.
And nice to have you. And you're planning to stage an opera in Waterford this year. Tell me more.
Well, it's a it's a new opera by Eric Sweeney, the Irish composer, who was a professor of music at WIT in Waterford, and the libretto was by Mark Roper. It's based on the Bacchae of Euripides, and it came out of a collaboration which Eric and Mark had when they worked on a short piece called Come the Sails for the Tall Ships visit to Waterford in 2011. And the producer of that, who's also my producer, Joan Dalton, suggested to Eric and Mark that they might be interested in collaborating on an opera. And then she put them in touch with me because I've had a bit of a track record in opera over the years. And we've all been working over the last year or so on the piece. We've done a number of workshops and we're bringing it to the stage in May of this year at the Theatre Royal and then subsequently at the Wexford Opera House.
Why did you decide to undertake something like this?
Well, I think Waterford is a very musical city. I think there's not very much new Irish opera produced. As you said in your introduction, it's in the 1790s was the last time an opera was produced in Waterford. I love working in opera because I think, you know, I come from a literary tradition, a text-based tradition in the theatre. I grew up and working in the Abbey and the Gate and elsewhere. And I suppose you paint your pictures with words rather than with images. But opera is such a full-blown art form. You know, it's so lush and so over the top almost that you paint your pictures on the stage with images as opposed to with words. And if I could give you maybe a little example of that just to fill in that observation. I was doing a production of Orfeo by Monteverdi a couple of years ago for Opera Theatre Company. And in that opera, the marriage bed has been prepared for Orfeo and Eurydice. It's beautifully canopied. The servants, if you like, are all colourfully dressed. And the wedding night is about to happen. And a messenger comes in to announce that Eurydice has died. And the music changes and the tone of the music changes. And what happens is that the chorus strip all the colourful counterpanes and flowers off the bed. They put on raincoats, umbrellas are put up on the stage. You get the lighting changes to a very dark pallor or palette. And at this stage in the proceedings, I said to my team, you know, if we were doing this at Santa Fe Opera or we were doing it for English National Opera, it would start raining on stage here. And I was saying that in a wry way. But one of the team, I think it was John Comiskey, who's our lighting designer, said, well, you know, let's not give up on that idea. So in the end, what we did was we had one of the chorus go up a ladder with a watering can. And it was one of those bendy water cans. And the water cascaded out of the can through the cut by the light and fell down on the chorus member, the messenger who was, you know, curled up on the bed. And it was one of the most fantastic things to see and to achieve in a very simple way.
A bit of improvisation.
Yeah. And the thing that I wanted to do, what I wanted was to hear the sound of the rain on umbrellas in a situation where it was counterpointing the wonderful plangency of that Baroque music. And although we didn't have the rain on the umbrellas, we had it on the raincoat of the woman who was lying on the bed. So, you know, that's the kind of thing you can create in opera. And we're dreaming up things like that, myself and my movement director, Libby Seward, for The Invader, which we'll get a chance to try out in about a month's time. And I suppose that's the kind of thing that gets me out of bed in the morning.
Yeah, and you know, it's a big undertaking. And when you make a decision like this to stage, we say, the first opera Waterford to see in a couple of hundred years, do you have to think about what the public, the level of public interest? Do you get feedback from people, and or is it just one of these things you do for art's sake?
Well, you know, to a certain extent, I suppose it's for art's sake. I mean, we're only doing three performances of this, two in Waterford and one in Wexford, so there's probably a maximum of about 2,000 people that will see this in its first iteration. However, we'll be inviting festival directors and producers from other European opera houses and festival directors from here and abroad to see the work with the hope that it will have a future life. I mean, there's no point in pretending that this is the real McCoy because it's not. Yeah. I mean, it is a new and it's a contemporary opera. However, I would say it's not, you know, people often think when you think of contemporary music that they're going to go in and come out with a headache. I don't think that would be the case with Eric's piece. It's actually quite lyrical and it has some beautiful repetitive themes and music in it. It's a little bit like a Philip Glass opera, for instance, you know, which is quite mesmeric.
And will it be expensive to stage?
Well, it's funded through the Arts Council Opera Production. The Arts Council have a very enlightened scheme where they're supporting Wexford Festival and they're supporting Opera Theatre Company, but they also support independent opera production. And we are fortunate enough to receive, a reasonable grant in relation to this particular project. It's also supported by Waterford City Council and by some private money in Waterford. It will be part of the celebrations for the 1100th anniversary of the foundation of the city of Waterford, which is this year, oldest city in Ireland and one of the oldest in Northern Europe.
And you've said a few minutes ago that you love opera. And I think we have a clip actually from your favourite opera, which is a clip from Rigoletto.
Bella figlia dell'amore, schiavo son dei vezzi tuoi, con un detto sole tu puoi, le mie pene consolar, vieni e senti del mio cuore il frequente palpiteo.
Thank you.
That's a piece from Rigoletto, and you're taking it all in there, Ben. I have to admit, I'm a bit of an agnostic when it comes to opera, but what does that do for you when you're listening to it?
I just love the interlacing of the melodies in Rigoletto and Verdi in general. I directed the opera many, many years ago in Cork, and so it's just very evocative for me. Mm.
Your own involvement with the Theatre Royal dates back to when? When did it come up, and why did you take it?
Well, when I left the Abbey in 2005, my intention was to, I was working quite a lot in Canada and the United States at the time, and my intention was just to work freelance and, you know, to and fro from the States. I moved with my family at that time down to Wexford. We had a house down there. I'm originally from Wexford. And we moved back to Wexford full-time. The children were very young at the time and they were starting out in school. I was approached by the Theatre Royal, by the then chairman, Eamon Flavin, and asked would I be interested in taking over that theatre to be the director of it. And I have to say, when I went over initially, I was a bit shocked at the state of the theatre, because although it's a beautiful theatre with a wonderful history and is very much the people's theatre for Waterford, it was very neglected and needed some serious TLC. And I said to the board that I didn't think there was anything I could do with the theatre, and that really, you know, if they were prepared to put their shoulder to the wheel with me to raise money to refurbish the theatre, that that's really what we should do. It's a beautiful little bijou Victorian theatre inset into a Georgian building, and it runs along the medieval line of the city, so that the back wall of the theatre, for instance, doesn't run parallel to the front of the stage. It must be one of the only theatres in the world where that's the case, where they didn't make any concession to the fact that they were building a theatre, but they put it on the line of the city wall, probably because the foundations were there as well. So to cut a long story short, we raised money through the Access 2 scheme, the Department of Arts, Heritage, Gaeltacht and the Islands, or whatever it's now called. It's gone through several iterations since then, and also ably supported by Waterford City Council and a succession of city managers there. And we did the work in three phases over a five-year period. It was very delicate work because there was archaeology involved and national monuments were in on a number of occasions. But I must say I'm very, very proud of the results, and people say, you know, when they come in to see the theatre, that there's a real wow factor going into the auditorium of the Theatre Royal.
And Ben, you mentioned there about moving your family to Wexford, lock, stock and barrel. Were you relieved to get out of Dublin, because your tenure at the Abbey, it was at a very controversial time when the question of moving the operation to another location, also the money that was spent on a lot of different things and the debts that were built up. Looking back on it now, how do you feel about it? Do you feel that you could have done things a little bit differently, a bit better?
Well, I think one always looks back and sees mistakes one has made and things that you'd like to change. I mean, I suppose the first thing I'd say is it's a long time ago, and everything has very much moved on from that time, including me. I wrote a book about my time there called Plays and Controversies, which was published in 2008, and I really haven't thought much about it since then. And I suppose you could also say that controversy comes with that particular territory. Every director of the Abbey, I think going all the way back to Yeats, has had his troubles. But just to address that particular point, because I know it was one which there was a lot of media and public interest in the time about the moving of the theatre. Among other things, I tried to orchestrate that move from the Abbey to the Grand Canal Harbour, where the Grand Canal Theatre now stands. And the move was supported by the Dublin Docklands Authority. We were offered a site there, and by my own board and by the arts minister of the day, who was Sheila de Valera. But it was opposed by the Taoiseach, Bertie Ahern, who was in his pomp in those days, and who I think was not keen to see the Abbey move from the north side of the river. And unfortunately, I didn't immediately capitulate, and I got into a fight which I was never going to win. An expert group was set up to explore the options, but this, of course, was just a way of kicking the thing into the long grass with the determination that it should stay there, which it has ever since. And it's a pity, really, because I think the Abbey could have been the crowning glory of a vibrant Docklands area. If nothing else, it would have prevented us all having to endure something called the bored gosh energy theatre. Right. You know, what a way of killing romance in the theatre.
you're not a fan of the name of it. Well,
no.
A lot of good shows on there.
I know, absolutely. It's a fantastic building.
And just looking back at that, because you mentioned that you wrote the book in 2008, presumably that was reasonably cathartic.
Sure.
What do you regret most? Because you came in for a lot of stick at the time. It was fairly full on. I mean, generally, what happens in the arts doesn't make front page news, but you were. At a personal level, how did you feel about it all?
Well, you know, I wasn't really thin-skinned about it. I had a reputation for being, but it did tend to roll off me quite a lot because I think, you know, it comes with the territory. And, I accepted it for what it was. I mean, I suppose, artistic people are essentially artists. And, you know, I'm there to program the theatre. And I think one of the things that you're never prepared for when you go into a position like that is that you're very much in the public eye and you have to be, an accountant and you have to be, a media person and you've got to be, good in front of the camera and all that. And nothing really prepares you for that. And I do think that the skill set that one would be required to run something like that is not something that's very easily encompassed in one individual. And I think the idea, and I know this has been a debate that's been going on recently, I think the idea of a duo going in to run these organisations where you have an artistic director who's really looking after the art and you have an executive director who's really the enabler or the enforcer is really the way to go.
The businessman.
Yeah, I mean, David Aukin and Richard Eyre at the British National Theatre are a good case in point. Mm. And I suppose when I went into the Abbey, I would have liked to have had one of my close colleagues whom I had been working with at Groundwork or at the Gaiety or Opera Theatre Company come in and work with me there. Mm. But the conventional wisdom at the time was, we don't want to make it too cosy for him by letting him have his own people in there. So there was a sort of a tension in there, which was difficult to negotiate. And I think if I had to do it again, I think I would be trying to insist that for that period of time, for my administration there for the four or 5 years, that I would have my team of people there with me.
So in other words, you're saying budgets weren't your strong point and it would have been better left to somebody else.
Well, and this is a standard response from arts people. But I mean, the fact of the matter was that the Abbey during my time there was seriously underfunded. I mean, I was trying to do a full remit of new work, international touring, national touring, outreach work on a budget of, I think, somewhere a little in excess of 4 million. When I left in 2005, it was acknowledged that the theatre was under severe pressure in terms of its funding. And the funding was practically doubled overnight and the remit was shrunk. And the number of seats was reduced from 600 to 400. So I kind of leave you to draw your own conclusions from that as to what we were working with and trying to manage during my time there.
Were you very chastened by the experience?
I wouldn't say chastened. I mean, I had run the Opera Theatre Company and the Gaiety, and I had run my own company, Groundwork, with Arthur Lappin in the Gaiety. And then I suppose the natural progression for me would be to have my time as running the National Theatre. I had directed so many shows there down through the years. It was a time for me where we produced a lot of new work during my time there. We did a retrospective on Tom Murphy's work. I tried to kind of move the Abbey a little bit closer to the European mainstream. I think some of the work I did there is beginning to pay off now in the Irish theatre. At the time, I think it was all drowned out by the rather loud controversies that went on.
Does that make it difficult? I'm just wondering, does that make it very difficult that suddenly you go from, being an artistic director, obviously, of the National Theatre, but it becomes a subject which the media sees on, and that there's not a whole light thrown on the subject. It's a lot of heat. And a lot of people take a certain view and they're not going to budge.
Well, John, I suppose, you say, one of the things that I regret, I suppose, I've never been a media friendly person. I've never been, somebody who courts the media in that way. I suppose I would have been regarded at a certain time, in the way I defended Sebastian Barry's play Hinterland or defended our production of Barbaric Comedies at the Edinburgh Festival as being maybe a little bit arrogant or a bit hubristic, during the whole Grand Canal Harbour controversy. So I sort of feel there was a lot of knives waiting in the long grass for the opportunity to take me down.
Because
when that happened.
Because you were outspoken.
Yeah, so. Outspoken, and you know, we were never boring, I can tell you that.
Well, it's been great to have you in, Ben. Ben Barnes, director of the Theatre Royal in Waterford. And for people who are interested in coming to the opera, when and how can they get tickets?
The opera is in the Theatre Royal, premiering on the 23rd of May, and there's a second performance on the 24th. It's in the Wexford Opera House on the 30th of May, and you can get tickets on the websites of both theatres, the Theatre Royal and the Wexford Opera House.
Text 51551. The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1.